meow.
Meow. Meow, yes, definitely meow.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Michael Dean. I haven't been on in a while, very much. It's been hard for me to do radio. I've been having problems with oxygen. I'm on oxygen. And that's a bummer. Most people don't want to hear it. I think, man, that's a bummer. And I don't even know what's wrong with me. I'm going to find out next week, but I think that I have COPD because whatever it is, it is responding to oxygen and it's not responding to asthma medicine. So, kids, don't smoke, don't vape. You know, I learned a new term this week. It was pack years. I have smoked 60 pack years because I smoked for 10 years, pack a day. 10 years for 2 packs a day, and 10 years for 3 packs a day. That is 60 pack years.
Wow.
And then I had 2 years of vaping, which is not good for you. People think it's good for you, but it's not. But I'm here. Fiends go on. I'm kind of like the manager of this band now, and I just come in once in a while and do a guitar solo. And talk about how Rand Paul is stealing my thoughts. So how's Rand Paul stealing my thoughts, Dobby?
With an orbital mind control laser, like all the politicians.
Yep.
I suppose he hasn't actually taken possession of the orbital mind control yet, but he is he's petitioning. He's campaigning to control the orbital mind control lasers. Yeah.
Yep. Well, Nima Vedati and I came up with this term, "Don't drone me, bro," in 2011.
I thought about that, and I was skeptical at first because I've seen it in so many places. But I listened to those old Fiend episodes and Anarchy Gumbo and stuff, and you guys definitely said it way before I heard anyone else say it.
Yep. We said it like days after the "Don't Tease Me, Bro" thing, mm-hmm. and the Guns and Weed movie. It's in the Guns and Weed movie in the last scene. There's a picture of my cat Fuzzy with a drone behind him, and it says "Don't drone me, bro" in the last scene. And we came up with that, and he is selling t-shirts. Yeah, and he is pro drone, but he is selling drone. Don't drone me, bro. T-shirts.
Hey,
don't
now.
Drone me, bro. Unless local law enforcement. Yeah, right. Go ahead.
He's only pro drone for petty crime. Okay.
Yeah, like so, robbing
like instead of the cop. Cops killing black people, drones can do it now. It's much, better than what
RoboCop.
And you know what? If you happen to blow up any innocent people in the convenience store, that's just the necessary collateral damage to fight petty robbery.
America.
Right.
America.
You don't believe that, like, Rand Paul's gonna, like, take control and actually be, like, a secret libertarian and, do all of this secretive
stuff that he's not
actually saying he's gonna do,
He's also spamming me.
Oh, that's
I don't know how, but I'm getting emails from him, and I've never communicated with him before. Nope.
Just a public persona. He has an incredibly boring logo too. I think the only one more boring than it is the Hillary logo that looks like a FedEx logo.
Yeah, it is boring.
So Hillary looks like she's been sponsored by FedEx, and Rand looks like he's been sponsored by... there's some tire company I'm trying to... Maybe it's Liberty Tires. I don't know, but it looks like a tire
company. Firestone, maybe?
Firestone, I'll bet that's it.
Maybe. Did you see Marco Rubio's logo, Davi? I thought you might find that interesting. No. Yeah, we were talking about it last night on The Fiends, me and Chandler, and it has in the eye of Rubio, it's the continental United States, but not like Alaska and Hawaii. So it's like this guy, the logo looks kind of lazy, but he totally left off 2 states. So it's kind of like he's just like not even caring about those 2 states. Like, whatever. Couldn't fit on the logo. So
they're implied.
Sorry. They're implied, right? But it looks kind of like a frozen yogurt, like a failed frozen yogurt company logo or something.
I'm gonna have to find this now. I should write like a political analysis of politicians' logos, like a branding audit of all of their terrible logos, because they dump hundreds of thousands of dollars into this stuff. Rubio, that's clever.
Caring about politics requires suspension of everything.
Yeah,
I've been watching this show. Some Fiend fan recommended it. It's called The Blacklist. And it's one of those, like, oh, I don't know, FBI profiler saving millions of people by torturing one. Kind of like Homeland, but, like, lower budget and funnier. And The Blacklist, it's like, I like this show, but it requires suspension of everything. Suspension of disbelief, suspension of statism, suspension of, like, bad plot lines. If you can suspend everything, this show is pretty cool. I dig it.
Nice. It's kind of weird that he has a whole tab dedicated to Hillary on his site.
Who?
Yeah, that is
Rand. Rand Paul. I mean, it's supposed to be kind of funny. I get what he's trying to do, but it's like, I mean, I don't know. That's kind of like giving someone attention, just generating more attention for someone that doesn't really need it. You know, like, why respond to her? You know, I get he's trying to be funny, but I mean, it's like one tab just dedicated to her.
Wow, Marco Rubio is throwing meat to the 9/11 truthers. I love this. This is great. What? His tagline for his campaign is "A New American Century." Does that trigger anything for you guys?
Oh yeah. Oh,
it's the project for a new American century. It's like the cornerstone of the 9/11 conspiracy theory is the idea that this project called the Project for a New American Century was what orchestrated the whole thing, or when it was like proof that it was planned and that it was an inside job. So,
wow, man, I gotta find some 9/11 truthers.
Oh, probably not. He probably just, you know, used an old calendar and didn't realize that it was the turn of a century.
Rand is also selling something called Hillary's hard drive.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
It's kind of cute.
That's clever.
Yeah.
What is it, though? Is it an actual hard drive? It's kind of a weird thing to sell.
Well, it's
a joke.
It's probably just a hard drive, but it's probably a reference to her whole, like, I have the emails, I don't have the emails, they were deleted, I use
that. Yeah, but who would spend $100 on that joke?
I don't know, maybe it's a competitive price for a hard drive.
Libertarian billionaires. To use it as a
What are those libertarians who still believe in libertarian welfare queens?
What are those things that people used to have on their desk to, like, keep papers from blowing?
Paperweights?
Yeah, back when there were papers.
Paperweights.
Back when there were papers.
There's still papers. This is such terrible design. Why don't these people ever call me and consult?
Because it would make too much sense. Because you're on the NSA, TSA's watch list.
Right.
Man, Rand is so square. Rand requires suspension of everything.
Well,
right now, Megatron has my vote.
Yeah, right.
What?
I'm on Team
Cthulhu. Megatron. I'm voting for Megatron. You're Cthulhu?
Team Cthulhu. All right. Let's go full evil.
Mega Drive.
But what I don't get is, like, If you're just going by what he says, you can't really believe him because he's a politician, right? But I see libertarians making all of these assumptions that he's somehow going to be a secret, like, libertarian anarchist when he gets in, that he's not really telling you what he really believes, but he's actually going to be a different person. And that's even scarier, that you would vote for someone that you think isn't the actual person they're saying they are, even though that's not the actual person they are because they're a politician.
Oh, he's a real libertarian. He's just committing fraud. No big deal.
Right? Like, I mean,
isn't that what that means? Isn't that what those libertarians are arguing? Right. Like, he's just lying to me. I can accept a politician lying to me if he's lying to me for the right reasons.
Right, right.
For the greater good.
For the greater good.
Lying for the greater good.
I mean, like, I really think anarchists should support Hillary if they really want, you know, the best candidate to run the country into the ground. So, hasten the collapse. Hillary 2016. So,
ready for gridlock.
Ready for gridlock.
I have trouble even paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
What about Fiend Phone, Michael? That was weird. I thought it was the call-in thing, but it was just...
We're using it.
Oh, yeah, we are. That's true.
Yeah. It's just, like, second nature now.
Fiend Phone has spoiled me. I hate using Skype now. It's hard for me to listen to any other audio sources. I mean, it's definitely spoiled me.
Yep.
It's okay. Once you go fiend fun, you never go back.
I'm kind of amazed it hasn't caught on too. But, you know, it takes a little bit more smarts than using Skype. So that's why it hasn't caught on. It's for people who are a little smarter.
Maybe. I mean, that's just a matter of time, isn't it?
So I'm really irked at myself for all those times that I sat there looking hella cool with a cigarette in my hand. And I was like, yeah, man, consequences. It finally caught up. Aww. I'm gonna have to make some PSAs at some point. And like, you know, I always hated those PSAs because they always had like the taint of the state on them. But I'm gonna make the agorist ones. I'm pretty much probably gonna have a tube up my nose the rest of my life. Although as ongoing therapies go, oxygen is really cheap.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's covered by insurance, but if it wasn't, it's like $150 a month. For the concentrator. Yeah. And then $10 a month, and then $10 for the canisters if you want to be able to leave the house. Yeah.
We should make PSA stand for something else. Like private something advice.
Man, that is Socratic. Private Socratic advice.
Or even just sincere advice.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sincere advice. Yeah, even as a non-smoker, I always thought someone smoking a cigarette looked kind of cool, and I don't really know why, because like I grew up in like
educational,
like it's totally not cool, right? Like, and I don't do it, and I wouldn't recommend anyone do it. And I even grew up like in the dare, like smoking is stupid, it's bad, it's, you know. And I still like could never get out. I was like, for some reason, it does. I don't know. It does look cool, even though I don't like cigarettes. I hate the smell. I hate being around it.
And flaunting death.
Flaunting death.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's cool.
And, you know, I survived and I lived to, like, flaunt death and be out of breath and have a tube up my nose. All right. And I'm not coming back after this segment because it's all I feel like doing. But I just want to check in and say that the Fiend's deep bench, he's doing a great job, man. I appreciate you guys and I'm proud of you.
Worms.
Thanks for
Worms. Yeah.
Take care.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com. This is the Freedom Fiends. How's it going?
It's going good. Going good. Hi.
So today's a pretty auspicious day. I don't know if you feel as violated as I do.
Yeah, tax day. Ooh. I felt pretty violated, yeah. I filed my taxes kind of early and paid the bribe already.
Not me, I'm a procrastinator.
Yeah. I like to just get it out of the way because it's like it's going to happen eventually, so just here's your bribe, leave me alone, you know. So how are you feeling about it?
I hate it. It's not so much the like money that bothers me, although the money does bother me.
Right.
Because since I've been self-employed for almost 3 years now, and that means that I don't have any withholdings, so either I like take money and put it in a safe somewhere and wait for the tax man to come for it, or I just get a big bill at the end of the year. And it's not like most people who have little bits stolen throughout the year and then they get a little cut at the end and so they feel good about it. It's like, no, I get to see exactly how much they're taking from me all at once. And that kind of stings. But more than that, it's that because I'm responsible for all my own whatever filing, I'm not giving myself a W-2, I have to figure out what to report and what not to report, which means that I have to like save receipts everywhere I go and like dig through email histories and figure out exactly how much that business trip cost me and like all this stuff. And so I it's literally like I spent 12 hours just trying to come up with the numbers I was going to report. And that time is more valuable to me than the money they take and the frustration and the just the sort of the violation of it, you know?
Well, and if you can't pay it all at once, like if you're a contractor or something, or you're, you know, self-employed, you get that giant, you know, bill at the end. And if you can't pay it, you want to make, you know, multiple payments or something, you get penalized for that too. So it's like you don't have enough money to pay them, you know, in one lump sum. So they're going to penalize you for being too poor to pay them by like charging you more to split it into a payment plan. So, yeah, it's a mess.
There's also all kinds of weird classifications. Like because I'm not like the type to register things, there are these projects of mine that don't have like 501c3 status or business license status or you know, whatever sort of tax IDs you need as a reseller or a wholesaler. It's just me. I'm just a person in the world, right? And so you know, like, what do I do with the receipt for Hoodie the Homeless? Because that wasn't me. That wasn't my money. But it, you know, may have come from my account, right? So I have a receipt for that. What do I do with it? And I don't honestly know the answer to that. But there's a lot of things like that that are sort of strange when it comes to, like, how I'm going to report things. Or, like, anything that's promotional. Right, so you can declare an advertising budget as a sole proprietor and write it off. And so if I'm gonna print flyers for a client and I have a receipt for flyers I printed for the client, is that a product and inventory expense that I then write off, or is that a marketing budget because it's printing, or is that like, what is that? I don't know. And I don't want to know. And I don't want to take the time to learn. And I don't want anybody to tell me. And I just, like, I want to pretend these things don't matter, because to me, they don't. But I don't know.
And it's pretty illegitimate the way things are run anyway. I mean, I think, you know, I pay my taxes because if I didn't, they would throw me in a cage. And that's the only reason I do it is, you know, it's because we're under duress when we're paying taxes, basically. I don't think there's any magical way to get out of it. There's no magical language you can use to get out of paying taxes and like tax protesting schemes and stuff. That doesn't work. But there's a strong moral case to be made for not paying taxes. And there's a lot of people who have who did resist paying taxes for moral reasons and still do that today. So I kind of wanted to share something I came across today. Maybe some listeners might be familiar with Carl Hess. He's kind of an old school libertarian, kind of anarchist leaning. He kind of came up with the concept of anarchism without hyphens. But he sent this letter to the IRS, which I thought was interesting. It's a nice brief letter. And he sent it. This would have been in May 1st, 1969. So I'm just going to read this really quick. He gives a good kind of summary of the moral argument. And he says, on April 15th, I sent the following letter accompanying my filled out 1040 form to the tax collector. And he says, the Declaration of Independence of the United States of America establishes a bill of particulars in regard to intolerable infringements, abuses, and denials of political power which belongs to the people. The federal government of the United States of America... actually, we'll finish it when I come back, or when we come back, I guess. So,
so we'll take this trip to the market, and we'll... we'll have more when we get back.
This is the
Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Look at that. Too busy talking to do a talk radio show.
I know.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we are back pumping Carl Hess into your ears. Do you want to pick up where you left off, or do you want to start over? Is it a...
You know,
what do you want to do?
I'm going to start over, because it was just one... I was one sentence in. So this is a letter Carl Hess sent to the IRS back in 1969 when he started tax resisting for moral purposes. He wasn't using any kind of argument saying, if you use these magical words, you don't have to pay taxes, or there is no law in the books that says you have to pay taxes. None of that. Like, this was strictly a moral argument, and this is the case he makes. So... The Declaration of Independence of the United States of America establishes a bill of particulars in regard to intolerable infringements, abuses, and denials of political power which belongs to the people. The federal government of the United States of America today is guilty of exactly every sort of infringement, abuse, and denial stated as intolerable by the Declaration of Independence. I cannot, in conscience, sanction that government by the payment of taxes. Further, the federal government of the United States of America has established as a principle, and ruthlessly, by the power of its officials, enforces as a practice, that it can demand the primary loyalty of the people, that it can exercise all political power on their behalf, that it can wage war without their approval, and that it can and should establish the standards of their behavior and the goals of their lives. I could not, in conscience, sanction such a government by the payment of taxes. Finally, the Declaration of Independence, in the clearest possible language, tells Americans that when a government becomes destructive of the ends of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that it is the right and duty of the people to abolish such government, to, quote, throw off such government, end quote. It is in the spirit of that declaration, and in comradeship with men everywhere who seek freedom and to throw off such governments, that I now refuse to pay the taxes demanded by the government in the attached form. And he attached a 1040 form to this letter. A blank 1040
form. So he hates roads, right? Is that what he's getting at? Is that the subtext?
I think that's the gist of what he's saying.
Just reading between the lines here.
He hates roads and children. Yeah.
Do you know, was he like thrown in jail or anything for this, or did they just sort of like, oh, I'll file this in the do not disturb list? Like,
he pretty openly resisted it, and he made some pretty strong moral cases for it. And it's interesting because, yeah, a lot of people will get thrown in jail for this, obviously, but there are a lot of people who don't. So let's see, I'm looking it up right now. Yes, the IRS did charge him with tax resistance, confiscated most of his property, and put 100% lien on his future earnings. So
wow.
They did get him. This is great. When implementing the penalty, the IRS told Hess that he no longer would be permitted to possess money. He reminded them that without money, he could not buy food and would soon die. The IRS said that was his problem, not theirs. But he was never incarcerated. He was a lawyer and kind of a folk hero. So they never threw him in jail. But they did charge him with tax resistance after they audited him. And
so how far away are we from the person who writes a letter like this, gets that sort of a punishment, and shrugs and says, "That's okay, I use Bitcoin."
Well, so that's interesting. How are they going to stop people? You know, from just using Bitcoin or from hiding money with Bitcoin, even. I mean, you know, I know they're probably going to try to regulate the exchanges because that's the point at which you would be switching Bitcoin back into dollars or other currency. So,
when they say that they're going to confiscate your property, does that mean like cars and houses and their things, or does that mean like a sandwich? Like, would they slap the sandwich out of a guy's mouth and say, "Sorry, we're putting this toward your tax debt"? Like, what does that mean?
Well, it says confiscated most of his property, and I'm thinking that probably vehicles, homes, big stuff. But it's interesting how do you define property? Because some people define these things differently. You know, I've heard some people say, you know, nobody, you know, owns property, and that sandwich is just as much my sandwich as it is yours. I mean, and I feel like the IRS is kind of socialist when it's convenient. I mean, they're completely socialist, but, you know, more or less so depending on maybe the person they're going after. So telling him that, you know, he couldn't have money, he wouldn't be permitted to possess money, which is such a bizarre thing. And then he was like, "Well, I can't buy food without money, I'll die." And they're just like, "That's not our problem." I mean, it's
I remember reading about a case, and I couldn't name it. I could guess, but it was kind of a cult, I think. And the way that the cult leader avoided this sort of persecution was that he didn't own anything. He had use and possession of all kinds of things that were given to him by his congregation or whatever, but his name was not on the church or whatever the organization was, and yeah, the church provided him with all of the stuff, and so he ate and drank and had shelter and had a car and everything, but on paper, he as a human being didn't own anything. So I wonder how difficult that would be to set up. Besides being like, I don't want to endorse the idea of being a cult, but like, if that works on paper, is there any reason why we can't have like one lone liberty activist who's in possession of everything and then contracts it out to people who don't own it on paper? So you have like one tax compliant person and like 100 hackerists.
Oh, that's kind of interesting, though. There's a guy here, Kent Hovind, who is this young Earth creationist guy who went to jail for tax evasion. And that was actually one of his defenses. Well, he tried to do a lot of the tax protester defenses that don't work. But one of them was that I don't own anything. God, it all belongs to God. And it's just things people have donated. And, you know, he was kind of using that same defense and it didn't work out very well for him. But he was kind of like, oh, no, I don't teacher own that any was thrown in jail for I'm that. Just a millionaire who's really...
Yeah, well, sort of. She just sort of like one day got the instruction or whatever to go on sort of a pilgrimage, and so she started hitchhiking. She didn't really know where she was going or how or why, and she didn't really have any resources or anything. So she just started hitchhiking east, which was illegal. So when she got pulled over by a police officer, he said, "Where are you going?" And she says, "To God." And then he says, "Well, where are you coming from?" And she says, "From God." She wouldn't give him any other answer. And so he held her on a psychological hold for a while. Man. And that was a big part of it. She wrote an autobiography, and this was a part of her story. I don't remember how it ended exactly, but...
Wow.
It happened that she came across another group that was leaving the country, and they had all the paperwork that she needed, like the passport and the visa and everything, because a woman in their group by the same name recently died and wasn't going to go on the trip with them. And so she just assumed that woman's identity and went on the trip with them.
Oh, wow. What was her name? That's interesting.
I don't remember her legal name. I knew her as Khadija, but that was an assumed name.
Right, okay.
But anyway... this tax thing is really interesting. I got an email today, in fact, it's funny that this was today, from a lefty anarchist who was trying to tell me that the way that you have your communist revolution overnight is that the workers just stop accepting payments. If it's on the shelf, you can take it. And as long as all of the workers agree to continue, you know, shelving it, then the accounting department just withers away and you don't need it anymore.
Wow.
And he thought that this could happen. Like, you could just get everybody to agree to stay at their job, even though you're not paying them, because everything would be free on the shelf. And then things would just go on as normal, and that would have no economic catastrophe related to it at all.
Wait a second. Don't lefties criticize, like, Walmart for, like, giving you, or other stores for paying people in vouchers that they can only use at that store? I mean, is that not the same thing, kind of?
No, because no vouchers. Everything is free, and everybody keeps working. Yeah. But what I couldn't get this guy to understand was that most of what an accounting department actually does is tax compliance. They're not like the capital investment part of the company, right? And so I said, look, if you got rid of the accounting department of your company, that's great. Everything's free, communist, revolution, whatever. But if you're not going to deal with the IRS, they're just going to shut you down. Like, and I couldn't get him to understand that the leash was held by the state, not by the owner. You know, but he imagined that the owner was this like great and powerful slave driver, even though like he was just as enslaved as the worker. But, you know,
well, and it's such a problematic idea. Like it sounds very nice and wonderful to say, oh, well, we could have a communist revolution. You just make the workers run everything and they just take back the businesses or they take back the factories. You know, like, I tried that at the first job I had because I was a little socialist. I was like, this, you know, we're getting unfair hours. We need to, you know, organize and demand. The thing is, workers don't want to organize against bosses. Most people like working for wages and they would prefer to, you know, throw their fellow comrade employee under the bus for threatening their jobs and threatening their pay. Like, most people don't want to be bosses. They'd rather be workers. And, you know, there are exploitative industries, no doubt. But to say that you're being exploited because you're working at like a fast food place or something that you voluntarily agree to, and other people do too. I mean, it's ridiculous. And like you said, this is a problem of the state and the IRS coming down on people, not these evil business owners. They're just as much under the thumb as the state.
There is an exploitative element to wage labor, and you brought up education earlier, and so I want to connect these two things. So first off, public education is designed to breed people into wage laborers. That's sort of the point of plebe education. So there is an exploitative element in the fact that they're broken people pushed into the workforce, and then they operate as people who don't want to be self-starters, don't want to be entrepreneurial, don't want to be anything but somebody who, you know, fills out standardized forms. And that, and the exploitative part is that that mentality was pushed on them by a rigorous sort of and well-designed piece of sort of, you know, education or indoctrination that was designed to do that. But you were talking about university education and how people in universities are being pushed out into the world with no marketable skills and instead sort of designed to be professionally offended for the rest of their life and begging for whatever it is that they feel. And I'm thinking, like, so if high school education is designed to push out a labor class and a soldier class, what is it that they are designing the university system to push out? And I think what it is a vast dependent voting class. It's pushing out people who have been trained how to organize and demand things from the state, also been trained to believe that they're not responsible to provide these things for themselves, and to be given no marketable skills to actually, you know, remove themselves from this trap. And so I feel like what you were describing was a factory line of a dependent class.
Well, that's exactly what it is, because they're thrown out into this world where they've been, where they're totally not prepared for, because the college environment is becoming more and more coddling of their feelings. And so they do know how to organize, and they've found that at college, when they throw a tantrum, if they can throw it hard enough, they can get their way, just like children. But it doesn't work in real life, and so the only resource is, get into politics or something scummy like that to force people to bend to your feelings.
And they're told to do that in college.
Totally.
Worms, we'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends. We're going to do an outtakes podcast that's just the commercial breaks, like a totally separate podcast on like a totally different website.
Totally. And it's reaching the next level in these breaks.
Yeah.
I feel like listeners may be missing out a bit, but
where do we want to go? I got this fun Cracked article. I don't know if you read Cracked. I love Cracked.
I love Cracked. I spend too much time on Cracked, probably.
It's the only clickbait I can tolerate. Like, most times I think clickbait should be like a capital offense, but
yeah. they make it so fun.
Yeah. So this is called Five Bizarre Things You Only Learn About the U.S. as an IRS Agent. And this is written, I presume, by someone who was an IRS agent. At least they're quoting actual IRS agents that they encountered.
Yeah, he got in touch
with an auditor and things like that. So I think we should go through this. I think we should all know what the IRS knows.
Yeah.
So number five in reverse order is the IRS is fine with crime as long as you pay your taxes. And I think the quote from the auditor is good here, and I'm going to just read it. In one case, I found a lot of unreported income, which is a big drug dealer warning sign. They were Colombian, traveling back and forth to Colombia constantly. She did widow treatment and apparently traveled to Colombia to get fabric window treatment. Sorry. So this person makes curtains.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the least bit suspicious. Now, what's funny about that is I don't think that's the least bit suspicious. I think this person is essentially making a racial or ethnic or national assumption or stereotype about Colombia. I mean, what is wrong with going to Colombia to get fabric? I have family that does fabric in Pakistan, and they do garments and things, and they have them manufactured there in bolts, or maybe they make them there, and then they sell them here, and they do wholesale, you know, garment importing. There's nothing suspicious about that. Just because there are, you know, I'm sure opium or marijuana grows in Pakistan. It doesn't mean that because they import t-shirts that they're importing opium. But whatever. I find it's actually hard to report all of my income. I don't know where all of it comes from half the time. Like PayPal gives me a nice, actually PayPal's statement is not very easy to read at all, but PayPal does give me a statement where I can actually create a record of all my income from PayPal. But what am I supposed to do when like 1,000 people at Porkfest hand me $2 to buy a sticker? Like, you know,
right.
I don't know where all that money goes.
Well,
but yeah, so the interesting thing about this too, is that a lot of the times the IRS is called upon to deal with crime. Like if you think about, like the mafia, what's his name, Al Capone, these people that like they could not criminally prosecute because they couldn't gather enough evidence, but they could sure charge him with tax evasion.
Right. Yeah. The IRS has kind of become another arm of law enforcement in that way. What stuck out to me was the very end of that that paragraph about crime, because it's not about the crime, it's whether or not you pay the taxes. So but they say like an estimated 75% of illegal immigrants pay their fair share of taxes. Like that's how freaky 75%? The IRS is. Yeah. Like they'll admit that they're breaking
the average American.
Right? Like I kind of wonder, you know, like illegal immigrants will pay their taxes. Like in that the Colombian couple you were talking about, the tax return or the tax due was $74,000, and they were like, "Oh, we'll just pay it in full." Like, and like, you know, they had all of his money, and they were just like, "Oh, we'll just pay it in full." And the guy was implying that there was some maybe drug trafficking going on or something there. But it's like, you know, drug traffic, as long as you pay your taxes, is kind of, I guess, the official IRS position.
You know, to me, this screams more of a convenient tool for selective enforcement, right? Like, this is essentially a big roundabout the Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment, probably both. And this sort of allows them to say, hey, you know what? We can't gather enough evidence to actually, you know, convict you of any wrongdoing. But you didn't properly testify against yourself on this form. And so we're just going to charge you with that.
If only you could plead the Fifth on your taxes.
Worms.
We'll be back for hour two.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, "You didn't build that"? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
This
is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. This is a reminder that Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. That means you, IRS. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Yeah.
Gotta watch out for the IRS. They think they're entitled to everything.
Oh, so. Entitled. That's sexist.
Oh, yeah. Whoops.
You can't use that word anymore.
Sorry.
That's better triggering.
Better police my tone there.
Police your tongue. So there are apparently 13 sexist things that you can't say about Hillary Clinton. Although, I don't think that it's fair to just limit this to Hillary Clinton. I think it should apply to everyone equally, don't you? I mean,
yeah.
Shouldn't it? Why is she so special?
Well, she's been very patient and has waited for this a long time. She just deserves it, okay? Yeah, these are really funky words, though. Like, because none of them reference her gender. And this is the thing. Like, if you're going to make
they're
the case
also all things that you would say about pretty much any politician anywhere.
All of these could describe literally any politician. I mean, if you're going to make the critique that, oh, there's sexism towards Hillary Clinton, you know, focus on that. Like, show the sexist ways she's been described. Like, is she getting maybe questions about her wardrobe or her hairstyle or crap like that? You know, but
yeah, that's
like
fair. I hate that stuff.
Yeah, I hate
when people
it too.
Like we're talking about like Sarah Palin's. Whatever, did she do a bikini photo shoot or something? I don't care about any of that.
Yeah. Like,
but one of the words on the list is ambitious. So I'm not sure if that means that it's a vicious stereotype that women are ambitious and we shouldn't be pigeonholing them into that role, or if that means that it's sexist to say that women aren't ambitious and we shouldn't be making the assumption that they're less ambitious. I'm not sure how to be offended. If someone would just tell me how to be offended, I'd be very helpful.
Tumblr, please tell me. How should I feel about this? How should I feel? Yeah, ambitious. Yeah. I thought that would be a good thing. Like, as a woman, I want to be seen as ambitious, you know?
Well, don't get overconfident, because that's sexist, too.
That's sexist, too.
So listen to these words. Okay. Calculating. Disingenuous, insincere, entitled, secretive, overconfident, represents the past, out of touch, polarizing, ambitious, and inevitable. Now, I just want to point out that inevitable and represents the past are opposite. So you're sexist no matter right. If you're on the temporal timeline, then you're sexist. I don't know what any of these things have to do with race either, but I mean, is it racist if we call Obama these things?
Yes. I'm just going to go ahead and say yes.
So these words are all off the table. Only straight white men can be these things now. Is that it?
I think that's the point. Right.
All right.
Right. Because, well, if women are socialized by evil society to be ambitious, they're not really being ambitious of their own volition. They're just being influenced by this patriarchal society. So that would be sexist. And, you know, just if you don't vote for Hillary, you're sexist. I think they should just make this easy. They don't need to attach extra words to this. They just need to say, if you're not voting for Hillary, you're sexist. You just are. And same if you didn't vote for Obama, you're just a racist. If you could just reduce it to these little talking points, it just becomes a lot easier to demonize everyone you disagree with. So, and then you get the moral high ground, which like feels really good. I don't know if you know that.
What if I'm voting for RC? Is that racist? RC is the female Transformer. There's like Megatron is running, right? Oh. But I was thinking like maybe RC should run. Although she is pink, maybe that's sexist.
Well, it's sexist if there's not enough pink robots, and it's sexist if there's only pink robots that represent.
See, RC and Transformers was a pink Corvette, and Barbie drives a pink Corvette. So I always like to imagine that Barbie is driving RC, and it's her like super girl power battle mode.
Hey, yeah, you can go in battle mode while still looking fabulous. I just hope.
But maybe that's sexist. I don't know.
Well, like, I'm not a fan of pink guns. I'm very, like, I'm not saying pink guns shouldn't be sold. I just don't prefer them. It's just a preference thing. I think they're kind of ugly and tacky and obviously pandering. But, you know, it's good if more women buy them because they like the color pink. But it's like, I'd like to see a purple gun or a
this is sort of
gun.
Like, I hate floral tools at the hardware store.
Yeah.
You ever seen these? They're like screwdrivers and gardening sets and things like that. And they're like regular old, you know, zinc or steel or whatever they're made of tools, but they're like imprinted with flowers because presumably that will make women buy them. And it's not that I have a problem with flowers. It's that like, it's just a straight economic decision for me. If a company is spending some of their marketing budget on these flowers, then they're not spending that part of their budget on the quality of their tool. And so I assume that if that's how they're splitting their resources, that it's a cheaper tool. It's a lower quality tool.
But they can charge more for it because women are used to paying more for all kinds of products. I mean, like razors and stuff. I mean,
pro tip. If you're into beading or homemade jewelry or crafts or any of these sorts of things that you would normally go to like a Michael's, and these things are, I guess, stereotypically feminine, but I shop at Michael's more than I shop at a hardware store. But pro tip, go to a hardware store. The plastic containers they have for sorting small things like screws are way sturdier and way cheaper than the plastic containers they have for sorting things like beads.
Hey, there you go.
That's sexist.
Pro tip life hack. That's sexist. So I guess this is a good time to talk about how I was called a misogynist today.
Awesome. I was called a child exploiter today. But you go first.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. So I became aware of this this event at Oberlin College. I don't know if some of the listeners may be familiar with Christina Hoff Sommers. She's a kind of libertarian, even almost like centrist left equity feminist. And she kind of questions a lot of the official
like
narratives.
Like a real estate agent? What do you mean equity?
Equity. Well, the more general feminist definition that men and women should be given equal rights in society, which is what most feminists will say that they are the type of, but that's not actually true because equity feminists end up catching a lot of flack from the other types of feminists called gender feminists, which are focused on more like smashing gender roles.
They're focused on whether or not the vagina monologues are excluding women that don't have vaginas.
Right.
That's a real story.
Right.
Look it up.
Yes, it is. It is. And so she kind of calls into question a lot of the stuff that's just taken for granted at colleges, like teaching that we live in a rape culture or, stuff like that. And so she's speaking at this very left-wing college, and the event page is just filled with people complaining that her presence, that merely her presence and raising questions about what they believe is making them feel unsafe. And this is like insane to me. So like I jumped on there and I started kind of trying to talk with some of these people, trying to understand where they're coming from. And this is so opposed to what the college experience should be like, at least when I was in college. College was a place that you went to expand your horizons and be challenged about what you believe. There was no overarching official position on some of these topics, especially if you get into philosophy and branches of feminism. It's all up for debate. And if you can't handle a civil debate, maybe you shouldn't be in a challenging atmosphere. And if you require trigger warnings on things and you require, you're saying that someone wanting to have a discussion is making you feel unsafe. I mean, I worry about your health more than anything
else.
Yeah,
maybe you should be walking around with a helmet all day because you have a pretty soft head.
Right.
Like, if you can't handle a person with a difference of opinion.
But it's so freakish. It's very Harrison Bergeron-esque. They want to handicap everyone who's smarter than them so that they can survive in this cold, harsh world or whatever. And the thing is, I mean, I understand sympathizing with people and trying to understand where they're coming from, especially if they've gone through trauma or something like that. You know, I want to level with them. But I'm sorry, the world doesn't care about your trauma. Like, when you get out of that protective bubble of college, the world is a harsh, brutal place. And should it be like that? I don't know. That's up for debate. Maybe not. But it is what it is. And there's no escaping that. And if you're not prepared because you've been coddled your entire life, then it's going to be a very, very harsh wake-up call. This kind of attitude attitude. So what these people do is they think that they can throw a tantrum to get their way, which works if you're a child sometimes, and it works in some cloistered environments. But
it also works if you're a helicopter parent, which is incidentally what the government aims to be. So
yes,
they get along
and it works
well.
In government. It works in government. And so these people, we were talking earlier about the educational thing. Yeah, they're forced into their only option once they get out of college must be to get into politics because it's the only place where you're rewarded for acting like a child.
It's the only industry that will take them.
Right. Like, you try to do this when, you know, if you get hired at a job, someone calls you a girl and you could have a meltdown because, you know, maybe you don't identify as a girl or whatever. You just have a complete meltdown and you just start throwing a fit and screaming. I mean, you're probably going to get fired, you know, sorry. I mean, I don't know. Is that the goal? Maybe to, you know,
well, then you
sue
have a lawsuit
later for discrimination. Right. So
why
are
you
a misogynist? Women I was talking to. Well, I'm a misogynist because I'm saying, hey, these are nuanced issues that should be up for discussion. You should be challenged on your belief that we live in a rape culture. And, you know, this is just the world we live in. You can be shielded from things while you're in college, but don't expect to be shielded from them when you reach the real world. And I mean, yeah, they just started calling me a misogynist because I was saying that their feelings shouldn't determine everything they believe, and you shouldn't be allowed to use your feelings to shut down someone with different opinions than you, who's not doing any harm, by the way. And their definition of harm is so broad that it's dangerous. Just like
it also doesn't go both ways.
Of rape. Right.
Like, I actually feel threatened by these people. Like, not individually.
Too.
Not like they say a crazy thing and I think they're going to hit me. But I feel threatened by, like, these photos that I see from clients sometimes of mobs of people with crazy demands on their signs. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, there's this, like, horde of lunatics that I can't reason with that are going to be setting the guidelines and regulations and laws that are enforced on me. And I can't reason with them. I can't have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
And it is this looming presence, this looming insanity that I feel all the time. And I do feel threatened by them. So they should stop. They should, you know, just quit triggering me.
They're triggering me. Yeah.
Crowds of people waving signs is my trigger. So stop it. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Too busy talking to do a talk radio show.
Freedom Fiends, on the back, talking about people who are too sensitive for the internet, for real life, I mean, even. Real life is way harsher than the internet, by the way. The internet, you can unplug.
Well, you know, the answer to hypersensitivity is a sedative, right? So maybe they should just be taking opium or something. I'm sure there's more, you know, government-friendly sedatives. But maybe that'd, like, help them out. Like, is there, like so ecstasy is an empathogen. It, like, enhances the emotions. Is there a dampener? Can we turn the dial the other way somehow?
Yeah, I think Xanax is a good dampener.
There we
go. Yeah. But yeah, so we're talking about people kind of wanting to change definitions of things that should be, like, widely agreed on, you know. Yeah. And this is a difficult discussion to have with people. It's really uncomfortable when you start wanting to define things like, what is rape? You know, I think most people have the general definition correct of rape. But the people I was discussing this with on this event, these women are, I shouldn't assume they're all women, but these people were fighting this feminist who's a little bit different than them. And they're wanting to redefine what rape is. And it struck me as odd because these people want to take us back to a world where rape can be defined so broadly that it would result in lynchings, basically. Like, we lived in a time where rape was defined broadly, and it resulted in lynchings. These people would sooner have men lynched off of some accusation of rape than have them go through a fair trial or, you know, not to say the justice system is fair or anything, but it's really disturbing that they're basically saying, like, team lynch mob. I don't think that's entirely fair.
I don't think that they would actually, like, wrap a rope around a man's neck and hang him in a tree until he's dead. They would do something liberal, like a lethal injection or something like that. Maybe along with their rape whistles, they should just issue every woman a syringe of lethal injection. That would probably do away with rape culture pretty fast, right?
Right. Well, I mean, so they say things like, you know, it's not enough to teach women to protect themselves. You have to teach men not to rape.
No, because that blames the victim.
Right. Well, this assumes that instead of rapists making up, you know, a tiny percentage of the population, it assumes that all men are rapists and they just have to, like, fight against their rapist nature. It's like, were you ever taught that, like, rape was a good thing? Like, I'm just wondering where all of these people are that were taught that, like, rape is a-okay and you should totally do it because it's totally all right to do. Like, I'm sorry, it's no, an abhorrent thing to everyone, think of it, I know.
And a time has ever told to me that rape was, like, a good thing.
Like, if these people are around these people, I'm terrified for them, too. Like, you would be unsafe if you're around all these people who were taught that rape is okay, but we don't live in a culture that teaches that. We live in a culture that teaches, like, the exact opposite.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any example, and I can't. I can't think of any. Other than, like, you know, there were some, like, rapey scenes in Game of Thrones that made me pretty uncomfortable. But I just chalked that up to, like, this is a medieval period piece. You know, like, right, there was a rape scene. There was a rape scene in, was it Braveheart, I think? And I'm like, ooh, this is sort of gruesome. But it's like, yeah, but you know what? That was the right of a British soldier in that system, right? And so it was a medieval period piece. And it wasn't saying that it was good. It was actually kind of saying that it was grotesque.
Right.
So, I don't know. I can't think of any instance where it says that it's good.
No. And I think you could talk to anyone and, you know, anyone who's not a complete psychopath rapist. And they're going to say, yeah, it's obviously a bad thing. It's not something that society approves of in general. Now, if you want to maybe specify those concerns to certain state institutions, I think it makes sense, like the military and the police. There are cultures that get away with higher rates of domestic violence and rape and all of these other problems when it comes to violence.
You could sell me on the idea of a rape subculture. Like,
a
isolated group of people who, for whatever reason, are networked together. And in that group of people, there's a kind of sociopathy or mob mentality that results in a tolerance of rape, or, you know, just rape lingo, or, like, fraternity systems come to mind. I've realized that's also a vicious stereotype because I lived in a fraternity for like 3 years and it wasn't like that at all. But there would be, I could see subculture, like, okay, so, like, pedophiles meet online. That's a subculture. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's a rape subculture. But
right.
That's not the broad culture, which, and that's even so nebulous of a thing that I'm not even sure how to define it, because I meet people on the internet in other countries and other societies that I have much more camaraderie with than some of my neighbors. So which culture am I in, you know?
Right. It's, yeah, the internet definitely expands what culture you can be a part of. So
let's talk about child exploitation when we get back.
Yeah. Covering all the hard topics.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Creamy radio audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget?
Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This is Freedom Beans, rated R for radio.
Whoa. Triggered.
What? Triggered. There's occasionally, you know, small bouts of frontal nudity on this show. At least psychological nudity.
There's...
So for those that don't know, trigger warning is this term we've been using, and as far as I can tell, it means interesting. What it actually means is, I guess, it means the same thing that parental advisory used to mean, only now people, you know, they can't be trusted as adults either. So even parents need parental advisories called trigger warnings, which means if you're a soft head, you've been warned that something in here might poke you.
it might offend your delicate sensibilities. And,
right. I like the Urban Dictionary definition is pretty good. I can't read the whole thing because we're not actually rated R. But I like the first bit, at least. It says, a phrase posted at the beginning of various posts, articles, or blogs. Its purpose is to warn weak-minded people who are easily offended that they might find what is being posted offensive in some way due to its content, causing them to overreact and otherwise start acting like a dip-ass. And so that's as much as I can read. It gets worse from there. But... yeah. I mean, it's essentially like, it's not enough to want to censor you. It's that I also have to put these horse blinders on myself so that I don't read things that are offensive.
Well, it's infantilizing. It's so infantilizing. Yeah. It's assuming that your readers can't handle challenging material. And this started at the college level, and they started putting it on books. I mean, classical books, like Huckleberry Finn, okay? I mean, trigger warning, they use the N-word. Like, well, of course they do, because if you look at the context of that period of time, that was frequently used, and it wasn't in a good way. Like, Mark Twain wasn't saying, yes, this is a good thing to be using. It was because the characters would have spoken like that in that time period, and it's actually a condemnation of racism, you know, if you read the actual book. But they put these things on everything, and it's just more coddling and more, it softens people. It softens people, and they get into the real world, and you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, I mean, the real world is full of offensive things. I mean, why don't they just get jaded? Like, I see offensive things all the time, and I kind of just have to roll through it. People say things to me and make assumptions about me, and I have to push through, right? Like, I have a purpose, and I don't want, like, to me, when I see offensive material, I think of it like a person is trying to, like, tease me away from the point of the conversation. Right. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to be distracted by your childish banter. I'm going to focus on what this conversation is about. But that doesn't seem like they seem to prefer all childish banter all the time. So
absolutely. Well, so you had a child exploitation story to tell, right? We're going to switch over to.
So yeah, we can do that. So this lefty anarchist who's upset with me for various reasons, he sent me his master plan on how to turn the entire world into a workers' utopia overnight. And in his workers' utopia, a person spends birth to 20 years old essentially preparing for productive work. He didn't really explain what that meant. I'm sure it meant some sort of public school or indoctrination or sit, stand, raise your hand, that kind of thing. And then from 20 to 40, you are engaged in productive work, and we're going to need some sort of objective measure of value to prove that you've produced more for the collective than you've taken for the collective during that period. And then after 40, you're free to do whatever you want. You can engage yourself in research or beach bumming or whatever you want to do. And so my question to him was, well, wait a minute. I know plenty of, I personally know plenty of people under the age of 20 who are eager to involve themselves in desperate work or in productive work. In fact, I employ one who is 15. And he says, well, that's exploitative and you're doing a disservice to freedom and anarchy and liberty by setting a bad example. And he didn't know anything about this relationship at all. But apparently I'm exploiting this person. And what this is, I go to events like Porkfest and Liberty Forum and Walker Stalker Con, and I go to events. That's my job, essentially. And this girl approached me and she says, hey, I'll work your table for 20%. And I was like, cool, I'm going to go get lunch. I'm going to go to the restroom. You go ahead and work my table for 20%. Now, the interesting thing about this is that I've made this huge investment. I've bought a hotel. I've bought a plane. I've bought all this merchandise. I've paid vendor fees. I'm paying taxes on this. I have a huge investment in the success of this event. And if I don't sell a lot, I don't make my money back. In fact, sometimes I take a loss. For her, she's making 20% cash in pocket no matter what happens. If we have a slow day, she walks away with a profit and I walk away with a loss. So who's exploiting who? That's what I want to know.
Right. Like, I remember taking odd jobs before I was at the legal age to work, which is around 15. In Florida, you can get a job when you're 15. But a lot of times they won't hire you until you're 16. Though, so the thing is all of these laws that these, which the lefty anarchist, it's such a weird thing to critique, because the logical conclusion of that critique is, oh well, we need a state to ensure that everyone's fair and no one's being exploited, and you know, children aren't being, you know, used in you know, agorist enterprises.
But see, that's the thing, like, what the heck does exploitation even mean, right? So what this guy would say, first off, he could not describe to me what his objective measure of value was. He said that he would leave that to mathematicians smarter than him, which I don't know why that's different than the accounting department he's trying to get rid of. But so the math breaks down like this. I invest in a product. 50% of the price needs to go towards the manufacturer of that product. 20% is going to go to the salesperson. I call her my sales manager, because she is. She's been doing this for a number of years. We consult now. Like, she even helps me decide what products to invest in, and I value her opinion greatly. And I take 30%. And that 30% is meant to pay for my hotel, my plane, my food, my all of these things. Now, he would say that I'm exploiting her 10%, because I'm taking more than she is, I suppose. But I have more expenses, right?
More expenses. And I have the risk of a loss.
She has no risk of a loss. She walks away with her 20% no matter what, right?
Whereas I walk away, I might lose. And she wants to do that.
She approached me. I didn't put out a for hire. I didn't put out a sign that says I'm hiring children. She approached me and she said, hey, I want to do this. And I'm like, cool. All right, go for it. Like, you know. Get down
and
with
a lot of kids do,
self.
Right? I mean, I know I did. Like, I was taking little odd jobs and stuff before I got a, I guess the anarchists would call it a wage slave job at a restaurant. But I desperately wanted that job before I was even legally allowed to get a job. And even more so, I'd rather work for myself. So encouraging kids to get involved early on. I mean, I don't see any detriment of that. You know, you're not working her in the sweatshop, obviously. You know, she voluntarily wants to do that. And again, this is the whole infantilizing thing of the left, even with lefty anarchists, some of them, they say, oh, well, you're exploiting her. And that diminishes her agency. That's sexist to me. That says, oh,
well,
she's just a young, it's ageist and it's sexist. This is a 15-year-old girl. She doesn't really want to work for you. Like, she doesn't know what she wants. You're exploiting her. It's like, I've met her before. I met Rebecca, and she's incredibly smart and, you know, great at what she does. I mean, I can't do sales at all, and she's excellent at that.
And you know what? At the end of the day, she's going to come out of this experience with a tremendous amount of knowledge and expertise that is going to be way more valuable to her than the receipt at the end of a university degree.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if she needs letters of endorsement, then I'll write a recommendation, then I'll write letters of recommendation. If she needs contacts, I mean, she's great at what she does, and she does it better than I would. Like, this is the division of labor, right? She's better at this than me, right? And she makes more at it than me. Like, she just does. She walks away with more cash in hand than I would. So, yeah. I don't understand this objection at all. And,
you kind of have to outleft them sometimes, you know, when you're talking with these people and they start throwing around words like exploitation, you have to call them racist or sexist and ageist and all these other things, because I seriously think they won't get the point if you don't.
Well, what is magical about the numbers 20 and 40? That's what I don't get. Like, it's just the same as what's magical about, oh, so at 17 and a half, you're not smart enough to decide what foreign country we should drone. But 6 months later, suddenly you have all the political agency of every other idiot in the country.
So, right?
It's like, it's magical thinking. Like, I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, I don't either, because it collectivizes everyone, and it says, you know, individuals can't make their own choices. They don't really know what they're doing. And there are some 16-year-olds that have gone through a lot in their lives and are really mature. And then there are some that act like 12-year-olds. I mean, to say that there should be an objective, you know, this age means that you are, you know, enlightened enough to do this, you know, thing that maybe we say you shouldn't do until that age. It's, yeah, it doesn't
make
sense.
I remember I must have been like 6 or 8, or I was very young when this happened, but I discovered the concept of garage sales. And I was like, wow, this is like amazing. Like, I get out of school, and then suddenly all of the houses on my block periodically put things out on the street to sell. Not only that, but there's a thing called trash cleanup in my county where, like, the city will pick up any kind of trash you throw on the street. And so for like 2 weeks, like, there's these mounds of garbage in front of everybody's house. It's like furniture and books and everything. And I said, you know what I can do? I can pull useful things these people are throwing away during trash cleanup, and I can go around to other garage sales and find things that are underpriced and then sell them in my family's garage sale for a profit. And I did that as a kid.
Nice.
And, you know, I didn't make any money, but, you know, I made enough money to go and buy, like, baseball cards and bubble gum and things. Actually, I bought comic books quite a bit. And, you know, it just came naturally to me. I wasn't indoctrinated to that. Like, no teacher ever told me, go and be entrepreneurial, kid. Like, it was something came totally I saw an opportunity. I saw the means to do it with my own hands and my own labor to make money, which was quite a bit of money to me at the time. And I bought, you know, comic books that were expensive. Like, I bought Wolverine number 1, which was like $50 at the time. I don't know what it is now. I don't have any more, but
that's a lot.
Actually,
for a kid,
I might.
Though.
I do have a box of all those sorts of old comic books somewhere. But the point is, nobody was exploiting me. The person who, at the garage sale that sold me the cheap stuff, was not exploiting me. The person who bought the stuff from our garage sale was not exploiting me. The parents, my parents, who set up their garage sale and let me use their space and their signage to take my take, they let me keep the money from my own stuff, right? So,
yeah. Well, I think kids are naturally entrepreneurial, and that gets trained out of them when they go through public school. And we were kind of touching on this earlier. Public schooling trains them to work for other people, to take orders and submit to authority and not really question it. So that you were even able to have that entrepreneurial spirit at all, that wasn't crushed, is a really good thing. Same case with Rebecca, the girl selling stuff for you.
Well, it was crushed eventually by the state, and I'll explain that when we get back.
All right. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends. So I want to tell you how the state crushed my entrepreneurial spirit, and then a new one grew, and then the state crushed that one, and then a new one grew. So I used to
they always keep growing.
Yeah, I used to do this garage sale thing, and shopping other garage sales was sort of the obvious thing to do because it would be the same day as my parents' garage sale, right? So in the morning, I could go out and scope out the deals and sell them at my parents' garage sale. But in my county, there was also this thing that it's like a spring cleaning program or something, and it's essentially that the normal regulations for garbage cans are suspended for like 2 weeks, and anything that you throw out in the street, the garbage companies will come and pick up, and the state subsidizes this. And so this was the time when you're like, we're going to throw out big pieces of furniture. We're going to throw out whole computers. We're going to throw out big, bookshelves and filing cabinets and just anything that you would normally have to, haul to the dump yourself. And so as a kid, I'm like, that's just free garage sale material, right? So I would sift around through these piles of garbage, and it isn't wet garbage. It's not like dumpster diving, although I've done that too. But this woman came out to me, and this is not the state. This is the proxy of the state. This is the threat of the state. Although she was probably a bureaucrat based on her personality, she came out screaming at me for sifting through her trash heap, telling me that it was against city ordinances for people to do that, and that once it was on the curb, it was city property, and she was going to call the police if I didn't stop sifting through, and not just her trash, but anyone's trash. And so it put the fear in me.
Wow.
And I stopped doing that. And that was why I stopped doing these garage sale things. But, I did other things that were also crushed by these, nanny state people. Like I used to do drawings at school and trade them. There was a big trading culture in my school for comic books and baseball cards and things like that. And I learned that I didn't have to actually buy comic books and baseball cards. I could do a drawing of a comic book character and people would trade the comic book with me. So it was like I could create the means of exchange myself. It was like printing money or drawing money. And I had a teacher who, she was upset because I was drawing in class, but she came over my shoulder and she told me, Spider-Man is copyrighted and you can go to jail for drawing that.
Oh,
and I'm in elementary school, so I just take, she's the teacher. I just take her at her word. And so that put a fear in me against, art for a long time. And I'm an artist now, so obviously I got over it. But these sorts of things, they happened to me throughout my life, that I had this instinct to be entrepreneurial and productive. And some statist person comes along and tells me, you can't do that. That's a crime. And so I think of overcoming childhood is ignoring those people and just saying, I'm an adult, I'm gonna do what I want, and I don't care.
No is one of the most powerful words you can use with these people, because they hate that they can't have control over you. That's really all it comes down to, control. And I experienced the same thing as a kid in school. I doodled a lot. Like I was drawing all over my homework all the time. I would still get it done, but I drew a lot in the margins and stuff. And I would get repeatedly admonished by my teachers, like, you're not allowed to do that. Stop drawing. And it's like, I wonder, had I stuck with drawing or something, would I be doing that more often now? But I also try not to, I feel that I did get to transcend a lot of that control, because they force you into such a box in school, and they kind of scare you when you're a kid, and it's all focused around just obeying the authority figure, which is the teacher, and any kind of creative spirit is easily crushed. And I always wonder, you know, how many more, you know, Steve Jobs would we have were that not such a factor in public schooling?
I don't know. You know, the other crazy thing to consider is that those people probably don't even know what the law was, right?
Yeah, probably
just like they see a kid doing something they don't like. I'm gonna go threaten him, and I don't want to threaten him myself. So I'm gonna use the state. I'm gonna
adults. Yeah,
you know. And I see cops do that all the time in these videos where they just say something's illegal and it's not. There's a video going viral right now where a woman is swearing. She's in a restaurant and she swears, and the cop comes and tries to kick her out of the restaurant for swearing and then arrests her. It's not a crime, dude.
Just say no.
I think the moral of the story is just say no. When statists come and state, just, you know, politely ignore them.
Shrug them off. Unless they're the IRS.
Well, it's been a great show. Thanks for coming on. This was a blast.
Yeah, and, always.
We'll have more in the future. Trigger
worms. Trigger worms.
Trigger worms. There you go. I like that. That should be the name of the episode.
It's happening. It's gonna happen.